Hello, Star Wars fans. It's your favorite fan club president, Dustin Roberts. I wanted to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from me and the entire staff of both TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. We hope you're enjoying the new ForceCast format as we continue to develop our show into one of the leading Star Wars podcasts in the galaxy. Enjoy the rest of the show, and remember, the Force will be with you always.
Artu, where are you? Oh, there you are. Well, if you come over here, you'll find a wonderful surprise. You'll have to plug into the central computer to hear what it is. That's right. No, it's not a phase vector. It's your Christmas present.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present The ForceCast.
Christmas in the stars, Christmas in the stars. What a merry Christmas this will be. Christmas in the stars, out among the stars, lighting up a Christmas tree. Come on everyone and sing.
Our hearts are full of joy.
Ask a question like that. Of course I'm getting ready for Christmas. It's all right here on my list. I've got mistletoe and holly. I've got peppermints and lollipops and 20 different kinds of chocolate bars. Everyone will be delighted. Even I am quite excited getting ready for Christmas in the stars. Yes, Artu, of course it's terrific. But there's more. Everyone will have a cookie. I bought extra for the Wookiee. I just hope that everybody can be here. If they all have marked the date, and if none of them is late, we'll have our greatest of Christmases this year.
Two moons above, we'll see them glow. As we go sleighing in the evening on the blue and frozen snow.
Why is that droid floating?
Because he is wearing hover skates.
Take those off, R5D4. We are supposed to build the toys, not play with them.
If they're not ready by Christmas, S. Claus will be furious.
I agree, Artu. We had better help them. Oh, perhaps Chewie can help too.
Watch out, R5D4. You are under the mistletoe.
Oh no, that big furry thing kissed him.
Only a bully would kiss a droid for Christmas.
Christmas in the stars. Christmas in the stars. What a merry Christmas this will be. Christmas in the stars. Out among the stars. What a merry, merry Christmas. A very merry Christmas this will be.
And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
And a merry Christmas one and all to all the ForceCast listeners out there. This is the ForceCast Christmas special, and we are your official podcast with TheForce.net and RebelScum.com, and your weekly dose of Star Wars, and yes, the galaxy is listening. Merry Christmas once again to everybody. My name is Jason. With me always, my good buddy Pete.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
And we have a fantastic show for you. Again, this is our Christmas special, and we have a guest in the cantina for the full episode. Our own version of Santa Claus in Star Wars fandom, Daryl DePriest, the senior marketing director at Hasbro, been on the Star Wars team for some time, and yes, he is Santa Claus. He brings us the toys.
And hopefully some special news.
Absolutely. Maybe he'll give us a scoop. Okay, we're joined in the cantina with our very special guest, Daryl DePriest, the senior director of marketing, or as we call him here at the ForceCast, Santa Claus. Daryl, thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, I'm glad to be here. It seems like I get out in public about once a year. Usually it's been around, you know, Comic-Con time. So I'm happy to, you know, have another opportunity to talk to fans.
Well, that's you and George Lucas. You guys make interviews about once a year.
Exactly. Nobody wants to talk to me. That's the difference.
Well, Darryl, what we do know is that you've been with Hasbro for 6 years on the Star Wars brand since, you said, October of 2004. You came in towards the tail end of the Revenge of the Sith line. Give us an idea, though, of where you were before Hasbro and when you first became a fan of Star Wars, because we're going to take a leap and say that we assume you're a fan.
Oh, yes. I'm a very large fan of Star Wars. And, in fact, let's answer that one first. I've been a fan ever since I saw it in the theater, I think, right around June of 77. I remember going to a friend of mine's birthday party, and the memory is so striking. I remember the day outside where I sat in the theater. Of course, the image of the Star Destroyer coming across the screen really changed, my personality forever, I guess. I was smitten from the start, and that's back when I think I was about, 11 or 12. So I was on the cusp of starting to outgrow toys, but not old enough yet that, I didn't ask for every Star Wars thing I could get. Of course, nothing was available then in 77, but, every single thing in the line I pretty much got for Christmas the following year. So, the Death Star playset and the rare Sears Cantina. So,
nice.
I started out early, and I never gave up a love for Star Wars. Then my path to toys has been sort of a long route, but I actually had a couple of other things I did career-wise after I graduated from college, but nothing was to me going to be as satisfying in my life as somehow being involved in toys. And I actually never thought I would be involved in Star Wars. One of my great collecting passions, in addition to Star Wars, has always been G.I. Joe, and that's actually what brought me to Hasbro to take over the helm of the G.I. Joe line after we closed our Cincinnati office of Kenner. So I was actually recruited for that, and after a few years on that, the opportunity came up on Star Wars, and I said, I'm ready for change. Let's make it happen. And, it just so happened that it was right before, really right after the product had been developed for Episode 3, but they needed management help to, kind of quote-unquote land it, so, to make sure that it was on schedule and we were getting everything on time, and that's pretty much, I oversaw the completion of Episode 3 and have been managing it ever since.
Well, so you had alluded to the Cantina playset you said that you had. Are there any other vintage toys that kind of you can recall pretty vividly of having as a kid?
Yeah, I got Star Wars for about 2 years. I was asking for it and got it for Christmas until pretty much I knew that I'm getting too old for this, And there's that point, I think, in everyone's life. It might not happen as much nowadays because toys are more...
I was going to say, because I'm still waiting for that moment.
But, I could wax philosophical on this. Since it's the holiday special and people who are listening to this have, nothing to do, but listen, I'll expound a little bit. But, there comes, a point in most people's lives when they say they kind of play with their toys for the last time and, kind of maybe put them away.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, of course, donate them or give them away or, send them to the Salvation Army. And I packed all my stuff away because I knew I'd want to get them out someday. I just wasn't playing with them. So I was actively involved in Star Wars for about 2 years, right when it started. And I remember getting every figure. In fact, I would go down. Here's another little side tangent story. I would go down to our local store, and people at the time were actually stealing figures. They were taking them out of the cards, and they were just leaving the empty blister there on the shelf. And I would go, and I would take those to the store manager, and I'd say, look, someone has taken these cards. I know you're probably just going to throw them away. If you're going to do that, can I have this proof of purchase? And I would take those proof of purchase, and I got quite a few. And I would send in for the mail-ins that they had, the stands. I got like six of the stands. And I was getting the Boba Fett's when he came out, and I was just going crazy. I loved it. And then, so I pretty much had everything in the line. I remember the TIE Fighter, loved that. And I was actually one of those kids who was a troop builder early on, and I had here's another philosophical bit. I believe that good guys are defined by the magnitude of the evil that they face. So you always have to have more bad guys than good guys, because otherwise, you know, what fun is it? You know? The Magnificent Seven. It's seven guys against thousands. You know, that's what it was about. So, uh-huh. You know, here you are, your small rebellion, and each one of you is worth, you know, 100 of the enemy. And that was, you know, and always the way I played it, because I played with, you know, Little Plastic Soldiers too, and G.I. Joe, of course. And who actually didn't have any bad guys, but that's a different story. but with Star Wars, I remember as a kid, pretty much for every good guy I got, I said, I have to get a stormtrooper. So I had probably 10 stormtroopers, you know, when I was a kid, by the time I kind of put my Star Wars figures away. And, you know, you had to have a death squad commander because someone's got to boss the troops around. And so in a way, you could say I was an army builder as a kid. And That in a way has, you know, has inspired a lot of what we're doing. Kind of, you might say, in the modern Star Wars line too.
So you're the guy then. You're responsible for this.
I'm not the only one. There's there's a lot of fans of troops and
thousands out there.
But what's happened is Episode 3 has really opened a door that existed in it. It was a much smaller door before, which is to do lots, you know, lots and lots of troops and have them prevalent, because now we can rotate styles and not risk, you know, kind of boring everyone. I mean, I know people want, you know, the super articulated stormtroopers, and we are bringing those out, but it really has opened, you know, the door to producing a lot of different styles of troops, so we can kind of rotate them around, if you will, and keep them fresh.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, one thing that struck me as you were talking earlier about when you first saw Star Wars in the theater, and that imagery of the Star Destroyer coming across the top of the screen, how do you, in your position, capture the magic of these films with the toys?
Well, that's a great question, because so much of any Star Wars toy is, you know, captured in the affiliation that we all have towards the film, because, you know, we produce a static representation of something that is very vivid, you know, in our imaginations. So the best thing, you know, we can do now is make sure that the figure is, you know, accurate to what people remember, you know, and, you know, plus or minus 5% of deco and things like that. And that the card art is evocative, that everything that we communicate on the shelf speaks to the consumer, whether it be a kid or collector, about their affinity and their memories for Star Wars. So everything should trigger, a feeling like, I love Star Wars. This is a guy that I need to add to my, you know, to add to my collection. And a good way that we do it, just when we do our line planning, is to make sure that there's enough newness, figures that we haven't seen before, that you know, get people out to say, well, Wave 4 is coming out. I've got to, you know, get there, because it's C-3PO with the Ewok throne. You know, it's
right.
That I've been waiting for that, and it actually, you know, gets people out to store, and, you know, and then hopefully they'll pick up the whole wave. So we've got enough, you know, hopefully destination product that we haven't seen before to go along with, you know, the figures that we do have to repaint and or refresh, you know, somehow. So we try and design every wave so it has appeal to, I think, the broadest possible audience, and collectors are, you know, forefront in our mind when we design really anything.
Now, you talked about landing the product when you were going into Episode 3, and one of the big events for us was the April 1st release of all of the or the first large wave of the Episode 3 figures. Take us through that process, because that's a completely different thing for toys in general is to have a release date, have something specific behind where the figures are going to become available. Was that obviously it was intentional, but is that something that was a big deal for you all as well, or?
Well, it was a huge deal for us, and actually we've striven for that. Now, I wasn't, of course, on the team for prior movie releases, but you know, it's always been something that's been desired, because kind of the more, I think there's a kind of psychological factor. The more you know about something further ahead of time, the less new and novel and exciting it seems when it comes out. So we wanted to keep all of the information, and Lucasfilm did as well, as close to the vest as possible, also because there were spoilers in the toys. So, you know, we didn't want too many figures coming out. I think we had, what, 4 preview figures plus Anakin Starfighter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So everything was just held because the toys revealed, you know, so much. But we were able to still release a lot of figures there at that time, more so than we would have done in any prior year. But that's because we wanted to make, you know, just a big statement about the movie. So, which actually led to something that I got involved with, even though I came very late in the product development cycle for Episode 3. By the time we kind of saw the schedule stacking up, you know, I kind of realized that we were going to run out of kind of fresh figures, new figures, exciting figures for characters pretty quickly because everything was so front-loaded. You know, we had, I think, 52 figures planned for the film, and all of them would have been on the shelves pretty much by, you know, August 1st, which left 4 months without anything new.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did was we, you know, created the now famous or infamous repaint wave of, you know, an additional number of figures that at least gave, you know, people some excitement, some reason to come into the store and become, you know, stay active with kind of the pursuit, which I think as toy collectors, we love the pursuit, the thrill of the hunt, you know, to find things on shelf. So we wanted to keep that, you know, that excitement going. So that's why we kind of created that wave. But you know, back to your original question, creating the, you know, kind of magic of that big pent up release with so many figures was our destination. We wanted to make that an event, but at the same time, it was incredibly challenging just from an information standpoint. I mean, we were very lucky that we had no leaks. It was a, you know, Herculean effort to actually keep the lid on so much of that information. It was very difficult. I don't know if we could pull that off again. I think the stars aligned to make that happen, but it turned out to be well worth it.
Darryl, when you look at media releases in terms of movies and music, they are able to have street dates. And in the case of the launch of the prequel film merchandise, you were able to pull that off. Is that something that we could look forward to in the future, or is there just so many logistical problems with actually having a street date for waves that it's just not possible?
It's actually, for our business, which is an assortment-driven business, mm-hmm. it's just physically impossible to pick any point in time and with certainty say that we'll be able to get the new figures on the shelf at this time. Really, it only works when we have what's called a planogram set date. So sometimes, you know, on January 1st, when all retailers will change over their planogram from the previous year to the new set. If we have sufficient product ahead of time, we can ship with almost pinpoint precision and have the retailers, you know, reset with, say, wave one of a new assortment. That's really the only time that we'll be able to predict that, and simply because in an assortment-driven business, you know, wave two is dependent on many factors, including, you know, where it is in the manufacturing process,
mm-hmm.
as well as how fast the previous waves sell through, and in addition, how fast individual retailers are at actually getting product to the shelf. So with you know, with music, it's different because it's a new item, you know, that can jump on board the release schedule. Toys, though, when you know, one thing is following another one in, we can never with precision really pick that. The closest we can get is just one-off items like, you know, for an exclusive that's supposed to drop on a certain date.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
right.
you know, when it's one retailer rather than all retailers trying to do something at the same time. So we've actually talked about this, and I believe it's come up in some of our Q&As. You know, people are asking, well, you know, could you do something like this? And it's just there's so many variables and so many factors that it's not possible to do it.
Well, I know that you just mentioned the Q&As, and those are really great, by the way, and I think it's awesome that you guys take such an interest in what the fans want. And some things that have come up, some questions that have come up about a timeline in the life of a typical Star Wars figure, and that sort of thing, which I think would make a really cool documentary on Hasbro.com or something like that, where you could almost kind of shoot something like that. But can you give us an idea? I know that these waves are planned. You guys are working on 08 already?
Yeah, and what typically has to happen is we submit line plans to Lucasfilm for an entire year's worth of product. And we do that. It's called the product planning process. We do that in collaboration with Lucasfilm, so we understand exactly what is going to be at retail for the course of the 12 months, what packaging needs we'll have, how the complexion of the line is going to go. So those are kind of the windows that we work in. And so sometime back, it's probably been a couple of months now, we submitted the revised 2008 product plan that had, you know, slots and details for every character that we want to do. So in a way, we've already thought about the characters that we're going to do at the very end of 2008. And as we go further, you know, those become locked and concrete, and really nothing should change, you know, our thinking on what those, you know, figures are going to be. Because, you know, we try and read the market and understand, and, you know, we listen to what the fans are asking for, and we're monitoring the message boards, and we kind of have a really, I think, good handle or good finger on the pulse of what resonates with collectors, and try and, you know, we've designed that into each and every wave of 08. So we feel confident, even though, you know, it sounds like, wow, 08's already done, that those characters are going to be very exciting and desirable and you know, and will, you know, deliver a product that's really going to keep people excited. It does mean that, you know, we do work far in advance. Now, sculpting, you know, kind of going to the next step beyond a line plan, the next steps are, you know, actually when it comes time in the schedule for us to deliver input drawings, to deliver to sculpting, those things come later. So, for instance, we're working on waves 1 and 2 of 2008 right now in terms of the drawings, which will become sculpts probably in the course of a month. So right when we come back from our holiday vacation, we'll be looking at Wave 1, making tweaks, and then, you know, eventually submitting those for deco, you know, probably a month after that.
Daryl, does the rendering and the sculpting happen in-house?
Yes, both of those. Rendering does. The images that are drawn by our design team, that happens in-house. And then we'll turn them over to our in-house sculpt design manager who will send them out. So we've got teams of sculptors, you know, all over. Actually, quite a few sculptors are involved in the Star Wars business. And we typically place figures with whatever sculptor that we think, first of all, has, you know, the ability to deliver when we need it, and whose particular abilities match what we're looking for, whether it's a creature or a human that needs, you know, very laser-like precision on, you know, on the features.
Right. Well, that's interesting. So you have different sculptors for different types of figures that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably not dissimilar to the way most toy companies work nowadays. I think there's, you know, so many independent sculptors outside who have, you know, such an immense level of talent that we definitely tend to send a lot of our work outside. But what we will do is once those come in, you know, we'll do a lot of the touch-ups, in some cases resculpts here, you know, in-house, too, to make sure that we, you know, we're nailing it exactly the way, you know, Lucasfilm is expecting us to.
In the case of a figure where you might do some retooling, in addition to changing the paint apps. Do those go back to the original sculptor? You said you do some of those in-house, but do they ever go back to the original sculptor to do some tweaks?
You know, the answer, I think broadly is no. We'll send it to whoever we feel, you know, can get it done when we need it and can do a great job on it. But usually I don't think we match it up with whoever went back, you know, who did it the first time. In some cases, those sculptors may not be available to us anymore.
Oh, okay. So then from the time that you get the sculptures in, then they just go off to production? Or do you take them back to Lucasfilm for any kind of approval?
Yeah, sometimes there are, you know, multiple iterations of approvals that are needed. It really depends on what we're trying to achieve. Like, you know, some of the McCory figures, for example, in each of the first eight waves of basic figures next year, we're doing a Ralph McCory special figure that's based on, you know, the original paintings that he did for George Lucas when they were collaborating on, you know, the kind of the visionary stage of Star Wars. So each one of those has actually been a little bit tricky because we want to make sure that, you know, the figure is faithful, you know, to the McCory illustrations. So it's been those have been actually trickier to nail since we're making 3D versions of, you know, characters that were originally two-dimensional. So,
right.
You know, it's been those have been a little challenging, but, you know, we've finally gotten to a point where, you know, Lucasfilm and Ralph are satisfied with the results. Ralph McCory is, you know, approving each one as well.
Is that right?
That's a neat touch. You know, it's really great.
Absolutely. I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know that he had any involvement beyond just, obviously, the original designs.
Oh, no. The team at Lucasfilm Licensing wanted to make sure that, you know, Ralph was in lockstep with what we were doing. They were really, considerate of his input and his needs and wanted to give him the ability to comment. And I wasn't on the team that went out there, but I think for our guys it was very exciting, mm-hmm. you know, for them to go out there and actually... You know, it's like,
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were talking about him in a previous show, and you know, next to George Lucas himself, there's nobody that's had a greater influence on these films than Ralph McQuarrie.
Oh, absolutely, and I believe there's a new book coming out. I actually don't have it, but I look forward to getting it on Ralph's work.
Yeah,
his artwork.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah,
and you know, I can't wait to get that. But just the ability. You know, first of all, you kind of step back and look at the, you know, the 40,000 kind of foot level at what is going on here. It's like the ability to produce a figure based on an early concept sketch of something like Star Wars. It's pretty amazing. It means, you know, you kind of think and appreciate just the power that Star Wars has, and that's the perfect example that, you know, there people want to see, and there is a demand for the figure concepts that George was thinking about with Ralph back then, you know, before it became the film that we know and love. It's just, you know, I don't think other brands, you know, can do that.
No, it's so unique. And along those lines where you were talking about taking something that's, you know, always been a two-dimensional idea and translating into a 3D, You guys are moving into the expanded universe where you've got comic book characters now that have never been, you know, three-dimensional pieces. How is that similar to the McCory situation or different in terms of logistics there, getting those out?
Well, it is very similar because in many cases, at least with comic books, there are more panels to work from, so usually we have more of a 360 view, you know, as it were, of each figure. But there are some very challenging ones that are coming up. I can't reveal any more of the characters, but there are some where, you know, we've had to provide interpretations very similar to the, you know, to the McCory series. But just, you know, getting into the EU, there's a lot of fun stuff there. I can't wait to, you know, kind of reveal more of the characters that are coming out there. It's been a really nice thing to start to expand out into some of these other very fertile, you know, media where people have done so many inspiring stories and, created so many characters that resonate. You know, it's collectors will, I think, really be pleased with what they see next year.
Are these figures that are really exciting for your team to work on, even though they're not core film?
They are, because you know, I have to give a lot of credit in particular to Dark Horse and to LucasArts for what they've done, and not to slight, you know, the people who've created great characters in novels, but the novels are a little bit more challenging for us to work in if there's not a visual representation of the characters to work with. You know, and in the comic packs, we've settled on, well, the packing will be, you know, comic books, so pretty much we're working within the Marvel and the Dark Horse universe. But, you know, we're comic fans, too. That's another thing I didn't mention. You know, I've been a comic book reader, probably more than a collector, my whole life. And, you know, just the ability to go in and work with some of these characters, you know, like, you know, Quinlan Voss. And I'll go ahead and – there's another one that I see it just got revealed today on Rebel Scum. It's Asherad Hett. So, you know, the Tusken Raider Jedi, I mean, what a great concept. Not in the film, but, you know, actually, you know, a fantastic concept. And we're very, very happy to, you know, be bringing him out, too. So these characters all have super backstories, fantastic backstories. And, you know, and they fit very nicely with where we want to take the line.
Awesome.
Now, Daryl, you talked a little bit about, you know, just the reaching out into different areas. Have there been any figures that, or any toys in general, that you've had to go to Lucasfilm and really make a case for, that you really had to argue to get, that you were passionate about and thought would make a great figure, but they weren't quite as on board, whether it's in the movies or in the EU stuff?
Oh, sure. There are some of those. There are some of those that are still on our quote-unquote wish list that have actually rolled forward from one year to another, that, you know, someday we'll get those through, you know. But for, you know, for the most part, on the other hand, too, you know, we look at our relationship with Lucasfilm licensing as extremely collaborative, you know, because they ultimately approve everything we do. So when we try and create, say, a year's worth of basic figures or the comic packs, you know, we really open it up, and it's a two-way dialogue. And of course, we have a ton of ideas, and they come to the table with some ideas, and we put together what we feel is the line that resonates best. And some of those ideas, inevitably, whether they come from Hasbro or whether they come from Lucasfilm, you know, have to be shelved and held over for the next year. And in some cases, they start to populate or anchor, you know, the next year's figure line. It's like, oh, you know, we have to do this guy. So we didn't agree to do him this year, but let's think about him, you know, for next year. And so you'll see some figures in 2007 that have been, you know, rolled over from prior years. I think the Yavin Wave is a good example of that. You know, it was actually slated to be started or to be part of the Saga collection. Some of those figures, and they became the nucleus for, you know, a whole wave that was actually going to be in the 06 line, but because of the tooling, you know, the sculpting and tooling delays, got rolled over in 07. So here it is, wave two of 07, but something that's been on the plan for a long time. So it's, nothing is ever, you know, that, you know, that's certain, you know, kind of, you know, years from now, it's all going to, you know, things are going to change, and we our opinions on, you know, what makes a must-have figure will probably change, and because some will come up that we have to do, and they might displace others that we've even agreed upon. So it's very, you know, it's very fluid and flexible, you know, far out, as it has to be.
Well, Daryl, I'm going to have to ask this question, even though I know that it's been answered a bazillion times. The issue of vehicles and playsets comes up all the time, and you folks have given a zillion different answers, and I mean all pointing to the same thing. I mean, you talk about the play patterns of kids and the tooling and all the things that are involved, and it's just at this point in time it's kind of prohibitive to do that. And a lot of folks have said, well, what about maybe breaking it out into some components, kind of like you did with the Cantina bar? Is this something that's on your minds there, that maybe we might, because we saw some great accessories like the chest that Ben had with Anakin's saber, and some more detailing there. Are some of these environmental accessories and pieces something we can look forward to?
Well, yes, because there's really kind of two questions there that I think you've asked about, you know, and one is, are we, interested in doing and committed to doing, you know, small environment pieces that go just beyond the figures themselves? And the answer is absolutely yes. You'll see a bunch of those next year. Luke with the moisture vaporator is one, but not, you know, certainly not the only one. We've also confirmed that the round part of the Cantina bar is coming. There are others next year. I'm not going to talk about those yet because, mm-hmm. you know, people haven't ferreted out those figures yet.
Right,
so.
Sure, I understand.
So we're going to keep doing that, but to kind of like now switching attention to the other issue of kind of larger playsets, these playsets that, you know, if you look 15 years ago or even 20 years ago in the 80s, like the G.I. Joe flag, you know, the aircraft carrier, it's like I can, you know, pretty safely say that companies will probably never do anything that ambitious again. I can't speak for every company, but yeah. the simple fact is that, you know, there's something that's been going on in the, especially the boys' toy category, but I think with toys overall for the last 10 or 15 years, it's called age compression. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is that the kids who are 10, 11, 12, who used to be an active, vibrant part of the boys' toy category, you know, just like I was when I was getting Star Wars when I was, you know, 12, mm-hmm. those kids are largely gone. You know, the 10-year-olds even are gone. Now, what are they doing? Well, they're still playing with toys, but they're just electronic toys or video games or, you know, more sophisticated things. They're not part of the action figure industry. They're mm-hmm. they're invisible to us because they don't buy anything. And it's a societal trend, you know, that, you know, we just can't combat, and we've seen this erosion. So what happens when you, like, you know, lop off basically a, you know, a few fertile years of your core age group? It means that, you know, there are just fewer people available to, you know, to pick up and buy and provide the comfort for us to release product against. And so those great kind of heydays of you know, big playsets really are behind us. The other thing that's happening is that, you know, with hundreds of hours of kids' TV, you know, literally every week and you know, so many things vying for kids' attention, that properties are rarely, you know, like Star Wars last year was so successful at kind of galvanizing the whole country. Like, so many kids were like, Star Wars, that, you know, that opportunity comes around now so rarely that, you know, and it really takes something as epic as, you know, Episode 3 to give us that opportunity. Otherwise, the kid base just isn't there. Now, we know there's a collector base there who likes playsets.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee you the things that kids want in a playset and the things that collectors want in a playset are very different.
Yes.
And what it basically means is that, you know, we've looked at these, we've designed them and mocked them up, and, you know, the results that we've come to are satisfying for neither audience, because we're trying to design with the other audience in mind, and we just haven't hit on anything. I don't know. I can't say if, you know, the new animated series is going to bring us an opportunity. We are keeping an open mind. But, you know, by and large, these things are very expensive to do. We don't hit near the volumes that we used to do in the heyday of playsets, and they're just not, you know, they're just not as important for us to focus on because they're too high risk. Vehicles are a different story. You know, vehicles, I think, in Star Wars now, we feel confident, you know, that we can go forward with some vehicle concepts that are, you know, more ambitious. Things like, you know, possibly the, you know, the AT-TE. We've talked about the legged walker. And we're actively looking at those and hope we can bring those to the market. If, you know, probably not in 07, but, you know, sometime in 08.
Very, very cool. Well, you heard it here, folks, as far as the playsets go. But I'm sure it won't be the last time you're asked, Daryl.
Oh, no, it comes up all the time.
But I think you're right, because I think the folks that are really doing most of the yearning for the playsets are your diorama guys and the guys that want really finely detailed environments for their figures to display them in. And I think you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, that's a playset, quote-unquote playset, that really might not resonate with kids.
I think you're right. You know, kids like play features. You know, they want zip lines to slide down and fireman poles so their figures can go from one level to the next and things like this. And these are some and missile launchers and things that can fall off, you know, so they can break it. And these are things that aesthetically, you know, don't mesh with what, you know, diorama builders, you know, want to see us do. And as a result, you kind of, you know, during movie years, we tend to, you know, move towards more the Mustafar playset idea, which I, you know, will admit isn't our best effort. But, you know, then again, even if it was a super effort, it would not, you know, come near to the volume that, say, a vehicle does. And it's just because I think kids, by and large, are not thinking playsets either nowadays. So it's just the market is very different. And what we tend to combat, and I don't mind people asking, but, you know, people, we're remembering the heydays of when we were kids. And
the Ewok village and the things like that.
Exactly. And it's a very different climate nowadays. So.
Well, you know, Daryl, you did mention the animated TV show, and I'm not looking for any inside information, but I've just got to know the answer to one question. Can you confirm that you have seen anything from this show? Any concept art, anything at all, to give us hope that this is really going to happen?
Lucas has been sharing what Lucasfilm Licensing has been sharing with us what they can, and to, you know, get us thinking about what's coming. We have, you know, we've seen reference, and yeah.
Okay.
All right. That's all I could say.
That's right.
And that's all we wanted to know.
Now, did the shock collar start to buzz around your neck at all there?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, that I can sleep in peace tonight. I'll have visions of that animated series dancing in my head tonight for sure. Because, you know, it seems like, my goodness, we just haven't really... We know that it's coming, but it's so different to not be getting these leaks that we're kind of used to. And, you know, here it is. We haven't seen anything or heard anything. So it's nice to have some confirmation. So we appreciate that. Let me ask you just kind of a general question. Being that you're the senior director of marketing here, do you feel the pressure of the legacy of this property and in these figures?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, I'm very confident since I've been a fan of the saga, you know, since the beginning, and I myself am a collector. I have a lot of understanding about, I think, you know, what the fan base wants, and since I'm a kids marketer, you know, I have a good understanding of what kids want. So, you know, I myself am very comfortable in the role of both delivering a product that excites the fan base and at the same time makes our licensor, you know, very, very happy that, you know, they're aligned with Hasbro. So myself personally, you know, I'm very comfortable in the role. You know, it feels very good, and I think that that we can, you know, satisfy all audiences. Other people, I know, Lucasfilm is, you know, it's Star Wars, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It doesn't get better than that, right? So, you know, it can be very, you know, intimidating for some, but, you know, it's a great team over there, fantastic team. We love working with Lucas Licensing. I think we've got a great collaborative relationship, and I think we've been able to do more, I think, in non-movie years than we ever have, and I think, you know, the whole fan base will see the fruits of that, you know, as that starts to roll in 2007.
Well, one thing that has been kind of on our minds, Pete and I have talked about this a lot. Does it weigh or enter into your minds at all? Do you ever look at the secondary market value of some of these items? I mean, have you ever been on eBay to see, wow, the some of these older Unleashed figures are going for literally hundreds of dollars? And do you ever see that translating into decisions that you make in the frontline efforts?
No, we don't go online and check out secondary market values, only because we don't want to have our thinking driven by value rather than focusing on, you know, character. And so our re-release decisions are based on things like, you know, the fans' choice that we recently did. You know, prior to that, we would have picked characters that we think still had a lot of demand and unmet potential in the market. And that doesn't necessarily correlate with what a secondary market value for a character would be. You know, a character like, you know, C.O. Bibble, which you know, Dan Curto has made every effort to say, there's demand for C.O. Bibble. It's not as great as, say, you know, other characters. And I think the fans' choice actually proved that out. You know, other characters like Pit Droids, who do have a high secondary market value, seem to have a lot more demand than others. So not all characters are created equal. You can't necessarily go by eBay prices, which, you know, dictate supply and demand. You know, you kind of have to take the character into account and its resonance, which is why we want to focus more on the characters. And that's why, you know, working with Dan to do the fans' choice poll has been just absolutely, you know, the best way for us to get input from the total, you know, collector population on the things that, you know, they want to see. We got our answers. You know, people love troops, but there's people who want to see droids, and there's people who want to see great characters, you know, come back. And not all of the choices were rare characters. And, you know, that was really the most valuable feedback for us and the thing that informs us the most.
Excellent. So, Dan, what's the, without spilling the beans too much, what's the one thing you could announce here that wouldn't get you in trouble that our listeners may not have ever heard before? Is there anything you might be able to say?
Oh man, so much has been leaked already. let's see. I already gave you Asherad Het, so okay. I can confirm he's in the mix. I'll confirm. Here's another one. Since, you know, people are starting to talk about this too. We are doing a Boltar Swan in the comic packs, and it's the Boltar Swan actually in the armored uniform from Purge, and she'll actually be, you know, the first Boltar Swan we do, and we chose that just because, you know, Purge is such a great issue. It's that key post episode 3, you know, looking forward to, you know, episode 4, you know, kind of storyline that we felt that we just had to do her. What people don't know is who she's paired with, and she's paired with the Jedi that actually kills her, Kofi Arana. So
wow.
there's the reveal.
Wow, all right. Thank you, Santa.
Yeah, you just got me really excited for that one. That's going to be awesome.
And those guys characters will probably be on shelves, I'm thinking, probably around June or July. So
very cool.
A little
very
bit of a peek cool there.
Well, we're gonna wrap things up, Daryl. We want to thank you for being with us. We've got one small set of questions here that we've kind of cannibalized. If you've ever seen Inside the Actor's Studio, well, we kind of do a Star Wars version of it here in the cantina. But we've even tweaked it further just for you, for our Star Wars Santa here. So, Pete, take it away.
Okay, what is your favorite Star Wars toy?
The Stormtrooper.
Which you had a lot of.
probably the vintage Stormtrooper is, I think, my very favorite toy.
Okay. All right. Do you have a least favorite toy?
Playsets.
I do. I have to be careful here because my design team doesn't like it when I point out things that we shouldn't have done, but right. The Cruise Missile Trooper is probably my least favorite Star Wars toy.
Okay.
3¾ anyway.
Right. Is there a Star Wars toy that makes you smile when you see it?
Wow, they all do. they all do.
Is there anyone that may make you sad, or is there something out there that makes you sad that you haven't been able to make it yet?
No, I think I'm pretty pleased with what we've been able to bring to market.
Okay, and our last question then, kind of playing off that, is if there's any toy that George Lucas came to you and said, you can make any one that you want, which one would it be? Or even if another a figure that you want to bring back or anything that you wanted to do, he said, here's your one opportunity to do whatever you want.
You know, it's tough to answer just because I think we're so lucky in that we're able to do pretty much everyone that we've, you know, wanted to do or set out to do. I mean, really, there are no limitations except one. And I can't talk about the one.
Oh, no. All right.
So the one actually that is the answer to your question is off limits.
Well, we can accept that. We can understand.
We'll know that there's one
thanks.
Out there.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. But you know, my answers to the questions are it's just I feel, you know, so fortunate to be working on such a great brand and you know, great product line and I love them all. So.
Well, we can't thank you enough, Daryl, for being here. We'd love to have you back at some time, maybe as we get closer to Toy Fair. We'd love to have you back in the cantina with us. And particularly, thank you for joining us for our very special Christmas episode. It was better than having Santa.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
All right. Merry Christmas. Thanks so much.
Happy holidays. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow, how cool is that?
Outstanding interview, outstanding news. I'm very excited about this.
Absolutely. And he is truly Santa Claus.
Yes. Bringing you much Star Wars Christmas joy.
That's right. And I know that, you know, there's some folks out there that are probably, had questions that we didn't get to that they would love to have the answer. I want to drive people over to rebelscum.com, the weekly Q&A. That's a great place to submit your questions. There's a myriad of Star Wars collecting sites. So go on over there. You can get your question hopefully answered. And I think we didn't scare him too badly. I think he might come back on.
Maybe.
All right. And if he does, we'll do our best to try to get some listener-submitted questions in. Well, Pete, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and wish, again, all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas.
To you as well.
And we want to thank you for joining us. We will have a little Christmas surprise maybe in a couple days from now as the show goes live. So make sure you're checking your feed or our feed through iTunes or whatever your podcatcher of choice is. And be sure to check out rebelscum.com and theforce.net just in case we decide to drop a little present on your doorstep in a couple of days. That's a hint, folks. So anyway, we really appreciate it. We want to thank Daryl DePriest once again. Please join us next week for the ForceCast Year in Review, where we have a little roundtable discussion with some Star Wars fan community members that I'm sure you'll recognize once they're introduced. So make sure you join us for that. And we do wish, in all sincerity, a very Merry Christmas to all of you and your families. For the ForceCast, Merry Christmas. I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
We celebrate a day of peace, a day of harmony, a day of joy we all can share together, joyously. A day that takes us through the darkness, a day that leads us into light, a day that makes us want to celebrate the night. A day that
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC, unless otherwise indicated.